Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
oh yeah, we started to burn many things we found, including ballots for candidates unliked by the Democrats or Republicans. Throughout our history, we have a sorry story to tell of election theft, election fraud perpetrated by the people in power. We now have a situation where the secretaries of state and governors of the key swing states in the 2016 election are all Republicans and are controlling our ballots. We are going to talk about this today on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show with my good buddy and co-conspirator of 25 years, I think it is, Bob Fitrakis. Bob, you with us? Hey, Bob, you there? Not yet. So I'm going to lay this out, and Bob will jump in when he comes in. As many of you might know, here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, I live in central Ohio. I actually grew up here before I escaped, thank God, to the University of Michigan. Columbus is now a pretty hip town, actually, in Franklin County. The county in the center of Ohio has got a very powerful gay population, pretty liberal bastion, actually, of black mayor for quite a few years, and a city council totally dominated by Democrats, although that doesn't mean much of anything these days. But in 2004, Bob Fitrakis and I, Bob is a professor of political science at Columbus State Community College, where I also teach history. We witnessed right in front of our very eyes the theft of the 2004 election. The state of Ohio, which determined the outcome of the Electoral College in 2004, when George W. Bush ran for re-election against John Kerry. John Kerry sat by and watched that election be stolen. And Bob Fitrakis and I watched it being stolen. We have since written co-written six books about election protection, election theft, and the happenings in Ohio in 2004. So Bob and I are now collaborating on a new book about the election of 2016, because we are pretty certain that the outcome is already certain. The title of the book, the working title of the book, is Why Hillary Can't Win. And the reason that Hillary can't win is electronic voting machines and electronic voter rolls, voter registration rolls. Because as in 2000 and in 2004, the Republican Party has a firm grip on the electronic apparatus that will decide the presidential election. Now, they lost it in 2008 and in 2012 for a wide number of reasons, which we'll talk about. But those factors are not with us in 2016. Primary is the fact that Hillary Clinton, Bob, is that you?
Yes.
Okay, Bob Fitrakis is with us. The primary reason that we're going to call our book Why Hillary Can't Win, where Barack Obama did win in 2008-2012, is that, number one, the Democratic Party has done absolutely nothing about the electronic wall that they've put up against losing the presidential election in 2016. And number two, the real reason Obama was able to win in 2008 and 2012 is that he took a commanding, insurmountable lead in the popular polling, which we doubt Hillary Clinton can be able to do. But also, he had an army of grassroots activists who were bound and determined to not relive the Bush era, and who really wanted to stand a candidate that they thought, we thought, might be a good grassroots progressive candidate. That turned out to not be the case. But nonetheless, many, many thousands of people. Bobby, you jump in your phone around there?
What was that?
Are you jumping around on your phone?
No.
Okay.
I'm sitting in a parking lot.
All right. Well, I hope they don't arrest you before the show is over. Barack Obama had an army of grassroots activists who came out to the polls, who got people registered, who got people into the voting places, who observed the voting, who observed the vote count, who really made sure that the election of 2008 was not stolen the way 2000 and 2004 had been stolen. Now, Hillary Clinton goes into the election of 2016 without a real solid, energized grassroots constituency. In some ways, Bernie Sanders might be a better bet to win the 2016 election than Hillary Clinton, because Bernie Sanders has the people on the ground who are excited, who are ready to fight, and who really believe in democracy. Hillary is going to be seen by many to be our Margaret Thatcher on her way in, and I don't think she's going to excite the grassroots in any way, shape, or form the way Bernie Sanders has done and the way Barack Obama did in 2008. So Bob and I are going to be writing this book, Why Hillary Can't Win, and it's going to start with a good, solid overview history of American elections. Now, to deal with American elections, and I'll do this part and then Bob will jump in, you have to understand the Electoral College. The Electoral College, which is the only college, Bob, you got a lot of background noise there if you can somehow close your windows or whatever. The Electoral College is the only college where George Bush actually did any good. And it was set up at the Constitution Convention in 1787 to accomplish three goals. First of all, the upper class people who wrote the Constitution did not want the public directly voting on the president. And so they set up the Electoral College kind of as a filter against mob rule. Secondly, there was a conflict between the big states and the small states. And the small states were concerned that they would be overrun by the big states, and so therefore, Bob, you're getting a lot of background noise. They set up a setup where the small states would be guaranteed at least some votes, and that's what the Electoral College was meant to do. But most important of all, the Electoral College was demanded by the Southerners, who had slaves, to allow the slaves to be counted in part in the presidential election. And this was done by giving the slave owners three-fifths of a vote for every slave that they owned. Of course, the slaves themselves could not vote at all. So the bottom line is that the Electoral College was set up to do that. The slave owners were also given, by the way, three-fifths of a vote in the count of congressional districts, so that there was a disproportionate number of congressional districts in the South as opposed to the North in terms of people who could actually vote. So finally, and this, of course, affected... Bob, you got to cut down the background noise. This seriously affected the congressional representation and, of course, the presidency of the United States, all the way from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln. From Washington to Lincoln, there was not a single president who either didn't own slaves or had a vice president who didn't own slaves. So now we get to the actual conduct of the elections. The Electoral College decided in the 1800s, the elections of 1800, 1828, 1876, and 1888 were manipulated so that the guy who came in second was able to use the Electoral College to actually win the White House. That happened again, of course, in the year 2000. In the 20th century, we had there were through the 19th century plenty of instances where elections were stolen using paper ballots. But in the 20th century, we had the rise of electronic voting machines. Now, Bob Fitricus, my co-author here, did work as an election observer in El Salvador. And, Bob, can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, in 1994, I was part of the International Observers in El Salvador after the Civil War. And I got to co-write the report on the election, and I was the editor of that report. Now, the key thing to remember, Harvey, is you've got essentially a country split between a left and a right, literally a fascist right, death squads, the Mano Blanca, you know, people that are fascist in the strictest sense. And you also had, Marxist left-wing guerrillas. So in that situation, there's only one thing that they could really agree on, Harvey. And the one thing they could agree on is hand-counted paper ballots, ballots that would be counted in front of each other. What they wanted was boxes, preferably transparent, see the ballots go in. No one could stuff them. And at the end of the night, before each party, the multiple parties, including the left and the right, and the media, and the UN observers, and the international election observers, those would be taken out and counted in front of the world. That's the only system they would trust, Harvey. Could you imagine if the Arena Party showed up and said, hi, we've got some people that were linked to the intelligence agencies of the fascist government, and they've worked with the CIA, and now they're a private company, and they'll be secretly programming computers and the electronic poll books, and they'll do all of this programming in secret because of intellectual property rights. It's proprietary, and then they'll give us a number at the end of the night with no paper trail. There would have been another civil war if that would have been the process. And that's the
Bob, you have just described the process that's actually in place in many states in the United States today. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. We use private, partisan, absolutely partisan, rabid right-wing companies to secretly program our electronic poll books here in Ohio and to program the computers and the software. And nobody knows what's in the source code, and nobody seems to care. It violates every standard of fair election. There is no way that you can call the American elections free and fair because they violate every principle of transparency by allowing these private companies to secretly program the hardware and the software and the poll books.
And which states do we have that situation?
Virtually every one of them, Harvey. The broader question is, which state or occasional county don't we?
Well, I think Minnesota has paper ballots. Is that right?
Which one?
Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota had done some stuff, and there's some states, arguably Oregon, with the mail-in ballots. But part of the problem is some states use OptiScans, ESNS, the election company, which counts 80% of our vote, Harvey. And even though there's scans, there's tremendous problems with their counters, not the ballot itself, because you can actually see how people vote and do a recount, but with their counting machines and with their central tabulators. Here's the other problem, Harvey, is even if I'm getting a good count the first time around, the other problem is these need to be fed into central tabulators, which often here in Ohio, the last time around, 2012 and 2014, are programmed by special private technicians from ESNS, and they've been have a habit of installing custom experimental patches.
Okay, so let's run this by real quick now. You have mentioned ESNS. Tell us about ESNS. You say ESNS controls the electronic voting machines on which 80% of the American presidential ballots are cast?
Yeah, roughly.
Right?
They merged with Diebold, their main competitor. Remember, Diebold was completely discredited in the 2004 election, and a few years later changed its name to Premier, and then had to merge and go out of business because of integrity problems. But most of that was bought up by ESNS, giving them about 80%. Two brothers were at the core of each of those countries, companies.
Who owns ESNS?
Well, the last time I looked at it was the Oklahoma, the paper there, the World Herald, which in part, last time I looked, I think the key operating owner was Warren Buffett. And so prior, you may recall, member Chuck Hagel was a part owner, the Republican senator who did so well on his own machines in Nebraska in getting unexpected vote in urban areas.
Well, let's hear about that. Tell us that story. Chuck Hagel was a Republican in Nebraska, and tell us about how he got elected to the Senate.
Well, he got surprisingly large amounts of votes in a few urban areas, in fact, not predicted by the polls. And then it turns out that he's a part owner in the company, ESNS, that ends up owning those machines. In most places in the world, right, he wasn't supposed to be doing so well. It would have been considered a fraudulent election.
So Chuck Hagel, candidate for United States Senate in the state of Nebraska, was a part owner of the electronic voting machines on which the votes were cast and counted in the race that he won.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember Mitt Romney in 2012, Bain Company, the company he created, a lot of those former executives ended up creating a company that then turned around and bought up a voting machine company, Hardiv Intercity. And one of the investors was a Romney family investment fund.
Amazing. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis, my co-author. We're talking about the book we're in process of doing called Why Hillary Can't Win, about election theft, election fraud, and the fact that the votes in 2016 will be counted almost entirely in the United States on electronic voting machines, 80% of which will be owned and operated by ESNS, a Republican corporation. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And again, there's some other spooky companies that have spun off, like Dominion. We're not exactly sure who owns those, but we can talk about those later.
And Triad, right, which is still in Ohio.
Well, Triad is really a maintenance, and they're into electronic poll books. And they're owned by a hardcore right-to-life family, the Rapp family, who's primarily known for right-to-life activities in Ohio. And one of the complaints is on the poll books, which is the voter polls, who's registered to vote. It'd be very easy, and there's been suspicions of algorithm that seem to eliminate, say, every 15th Democratic voter or every black voter. It would be very simple to write these programs.
And where do the suspicions come from that they've been doing this?
Where what?
How do what has given rise to the suspicion that they've been doing this?
Oh, well, there was tremendous purges, you recall, in the 2004 election. In fact, in In Cleveland, 24.96%, nearly 25% of every single voter in Cleveland who had voted in the 2000 election had been purged 4 years later, one of the largest mass purges in U.S. history. You know, really is the new Jim Crow. And the black communities were targeted overwhelmingly in Cleveland.
Bob, you're fading there.
Oh, okay, let me see if I can move over here, trying to get a better location.
Okay, so by and large, you're good, and the noise that we had in the beginning of the show has gone away, so that's great. So let's talk now, Bob. We everybody knows in the 1800s, into the 1900s, the early 1900s, there was plenty of election theft and fraud. I think the most egregious example might have been the election of 1896, when William Jennings Bryan ran against William McKinley, and the Republican Party, led by Mark Hanna, raised $15 million, which at the time was an astronomical sum, and just flat out stole the thing. But in the early 20th century, and certainly after World War II, there was the rise of electronic voting machines, not just here, but used by the CIA and other foreign policy arms of the United States to rig elections in other countries. So, Bob, you are, and I want to mention, by the way, Bob Fitrakis, my co-author here, is a professor, full professor of political science with a PhD at the Oklahoma State Community College and has a law degree and has conducted many of the high-profile, most important litigations on election theft, certainly since 2004. So, Bob, can you give us a thumbnail history now of the rise of electronic voting and its use and misuse, both here and abroad?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is that the use of so-called mainframe computers to rig election were used in the 80s by the U.S. government under Ronald Reagan to attempt to rig the election to keep Marcos in place.
In the Philippines.
So, yeah, Aquino, in fact, they used to use mainframes. They brought in those large tapes. When Marcos was losing the election, they actually shut the computers down and brought in tapes that had pre-programmed results and then restarted the computer. Senator Richard Lugar, to his credit, really the man that, you know, helped bring democracy to the Philippines with Aquino's People's Movement, refused to go down. He was a Republican, but he was very principled, and he refused to go along with the computer theft of that first election. And later, when he ran for president, was branded that he wasn't a team player because he wouldn't go along with the CIA's computer theft of the Aquino election back in the 1980s when they were attempting to steal it from Marcos. In fact, they did steal it, but Aquino and her people supporters didn't give in, and Lugar put pressure on in the United States until Reagan had to tell Marcos, our dictator there, to leave.
And he took all his wife's shoes with him.
He
took all his wife's shoes, as you'll recall.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was in the mid-80s. Is that your first real contact with the use of electronic voting machines?
Yeah, for the most part, there had there'd been some previous attempts at these early voting machines by a man named Ransom Shoup, who was twice convicted of election tampering in Philadelphia. He had a machine called the Shouptronic, and it was plagued because, you know, he had been caught in two election rigging scandals. And what he did is they renamed that machine the Danaher, and that emerges in 1988, Harvey. in New Hampshire in the primary when Bob Dole's up by about 8 points in the poll, tracking poll prior to the election. And then on the Tuesday, Bush ends up winning by 9 points. So there's a 17 New Hampshire, you know, the first primary in 1988.
George H.W. Bush. George the first.
Yeah, George Herbert Walker Bush. And, you know, former CIA director who was responsible for rigging elections in the Third World. They used to call them benign operations. That means it wasn't a bloody coup. They just rigged an election locally at the state level, at the national level, for pro-U.S. interest. So in 1988, the governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu, who ends up being Bush's chief of staff, brings in the Shooptronic machines, just these god-awful voting machines with no real paper trail, and he brings them into the largest city in New Hampshire, Manchester, and lo and behold, the Washington Post talks about this unforeseen, unexplained, last-minute grassroots drive for the CIA director, George Herbert Walker Bush. No one assumes that maybe the instrument recording, that is the private machine, is in fact stealing votes. It's programmed. It's a computer to make sure Bush wins. So that's the most famous. The first time we use these, the results make no sense whatsoever.
Well, 17% swing is a huge swing. That's what we call a virtual statistical impossibility.
Sure, absolutely. It makes no sense to count a swing of that level. Social scientists are trained to immediately go to the recording instrument. You would assume that whatever recording your data, whatever machine, is malfunctioning or programmed incorrectly.
So George H.W. Bush, who was the incumbent vice president under Ronald Reagan, is running in conservative New Hampshire in 1988 for the presidential nomination. He is behind Bob Dole coming into the election by about 8%,
yeah,
which is a very solid margin, and emerges the next day winning by 9%, a 17-point shift in the voting outcome, and his friend the governor has installed the electronic voting machines, and nobody says a word.
Yeah, and Sununu came out of the computer industry, and he ends up being Bush's chief of staff. No, the Washington Times just talks about this unprecedented and unforeseen and unpredicted grassroots groundswell. You know, kind of preppy mania.
Yeah.
No one says, now look, if this was any other country in the world, we would say, you know, if this was Putin, we'd say, oh my God, former KGB guy brings in computers for the first time and he wins in a landslide, despite predictions to the contrary. Clearly, he rigged the election and programmed the computers. But in America, we kind of miss the obvious. It's the CIA director. They've stolen elections with computer mainframes. Now they're using these freestanding things. So instead of going for a more plausible explanation, we talk about, you know, must be preppy mania.
Yeah, right. All the fraternity houses in New Hampshire came out to vote for George Herbert Walker Bush because he was skulling bones at Yale. That makes a lot of sense. We're talking with Bob Petraeus, one of the world's leading experts on election theft, and my co-author on an upcoming book, which we're starting to lay out now, called Why Hillary Can't Win. We're going to get to exactly why Hillary can't win. Nobody said anything in New Hampshire in 1988 about this astonishing swing in the voting outcome?
No, and it really, Bob Dole, had he won that, as he was predicted to, probably would have ousted Bush if he would have won, because Bush was considered, you know, on the ropes. Dole had a good chance of winning. So the career of the Bush family, Bush one is president, followed by Bush two, and perhaps Bush three coming up, would have been stopped in its tracks. But I don't know how much.
And of course, there's another aspect to this. In the general election, H.W. went up against, I hate to call him H.W. because those are my initials, George Herbert Walker Bush went up against Michael Dukakis, and Dukakis was hugely favored and somehow lost that election. Is there any electronic evidence that that might have been, that the general election might have been messed with?
Well, what's clear in that election and what's wrong in that election is at Langley, CIA headquarters, they were openly campaigning with posters and other items, right, and working on behalf of the CIA director who's running for president in violation of, you know, the Pendleton Act and at the state, the Little Pendleton Act. So the CIA is actively involved in subverting the candidacy of Mike Dukakis, and nobody says anything to him, probably because they're the CIA.
Right. So just for a few months, the Central Intelligence Agency, the biggest, you know, subversive organization in the world in terms of third world democracies, decides to become campaign HQ for George H.W. Bush in an election against another American. That's exciting.
It is. In a decade prior to that, in 78 and 80, most evidence suggests they took out the liberal senators, Frank Church in Idaho, McGovern in that 78 to 80 period. All sorts of secret money arrived out in Idaho and in South Dakota, and mantras were ABC, you know, all anybody but Church. Senator Church does not represent the people of Idaho. No one really knew where the money came from, but it looked like a very standard CIA benign operation to rig elections.
Amazing. Amazing.
Remember, so, Church had those his committee review, were the one that revealed a lot of the horrors of the CIA during the Cold War.
Well, I think Frank Church is the last senator from Idaho who was noticeably left of Attila the Hun. I don't think anybody else progressive has come out of Idaho since. Frank Church was a great senator. He was very much in the thick of Watergate and of opposing the war in Vietnam.
And he did a lot on revealing MK Ultra and other CIA horrendous activities, some of them conducted by the former Operation Paperclip Nazis that were working for the CIA.
So
he revealed the assassinations as well.
And I just think in retrospect, remembering that election of 88, that the CIA must have subverted the Dukakis campaign. I mean, he was more than capable of screwing up his own campaign, but sure the CIA had no intention of allowing Michael Dukakis to become president in 1988 if George H.W. Bush has got a chance of becoming the El Jefe there. We're talking about Bob Trakas, one of the world's leading experts on election theft, about our upcoming book. I figure hopefully they have it out by January. Why Hillary can't win. And the reason Hillary can't win is because the electronic voting machines are rigged. Let's talk about 92. Bush was running for re-election. He had 90% approval ratings in 91% after the four-day Gulf War, where he kicked Saddam Hussein out of the Kuwaiti oil fields, but was not stupid enough to go marching into Baghdad like his son. Bush, clearly, you would think the CIA would want to reelect it, but up comes this extraterrestrial candidate, Ross Perot, with more money than God, and wins himself 19% of the vote. Now, in the middle of that campaign, something really weird happened with Ross Perot. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, Ross Perot at one point, even though he has a plurality and is winning in many states, drops out of the election. So, and again, more than anything, he stopped Bush from winning. And you're right, he spent $60 million of his own money on that election. But he actually was given bad information from former intelligence operatives. And one of the things that's been widely reported is someone had been telling him, and, you know, these former intelligence agents around him are claiming it's true. Someone said they had a tape of his daughter, you know, like in college, experimenting with bisexuality, and they were going to release it all. So Ross Perot, you know, gets out of it, and then months later re-enters after his campaign has pretty much been destroyed. But again, he was the force that drew votes from George Herbert Walker Bush. We got to remember Bill Clinton, you know, did not get a majority of the vote in that election.
Well, the only way Clinton won in 1992 was because Perot was in the race. If Ross Perot
right.
had not
took money in key states, took votes away from Bush.
From Bush. Well, the only thing that really intrigues me about the 92 election is that why did the CIA actually let Ross Perot live? I mean, that was, you know, they shot somebody.
Perot was pretty paranoid, and he had a lot of money as a billionaire, and he had some connections himself. Remember, his electronic EDS data services, which had been bought up by General Electric, and then he kept, you know, screaming about building jobs in the U.S. and building, you know, stuff in Flint, and they paid $750 million to get him off the board of General Motors. So Perot was a force in his own right.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that the Bush didn't let him get by with it. So Clinton gets elected. Is there any indication? I haven't seen anything much really about electronic machines used in the 92 or 96 election.
Now, it was still a period where you're developing certain amount of software for election management through mainframes. It still was in many states an election where they were using punch cards. In order to get the huge transition, you need that 2000 election with Gore where they're peering at the punch cards.
Well, punch cards, and then, of course, they go to touchscreens. And touchscreens are the ultimate engine of election theft.
Although in 1992, I ran against John Kasich, now the governor of Ohio, as a Democrat. And in my race in the 55th Ward, which is a black neighborhood, Democratic neighborhood, and I was a Democratic nominee, in the primary, a guy I was running against who was a rural candidate ends up getting 80% of the vote, and I get 20. The exact result of what was expected. And these were on these Danaher machines, the former Shooptronics, used in 1988. They have ballot rotation in Ohio. If the ballot doesn't rotate as it's supposed to, it was real clear that the machines had reversed the vote count. And then a little later in 1994, and particularly 1996, when Kasich is running against a female candidate, she conceded that the vote count had been reversed in Westerville. So Kasich, in the fall election in 96, loses his own hometown, which didn't happen in reality. So there'd been a tremendous problem with these machines recording correctly in Ohio with ballot rotation, where the names of the candidate switch from precinct to precinct so that no one gets to be number one all the time.
So you have to have a different method of counting. Let's now talk about the big one, the transition now at the turn of the century away from And of course, you know, you and I have documented many of the in the 19th century and in the early 20th century. I think the most obvious symbol of the whole corruption of the even with paper ballots electoral process was Eugene V. Debs, the great socialist, the most popular, most loved labor leader in all of American history, certainly the most famous man in America next to Teddy Roosevelt, ran five times for president. They never conceded that he got more than a million votes, although I cannot imagine that he didn't. And then runs, takes a year off in 1916, runs for Congress in his hometown of Terre Haute, Indiana, and gets zero votes, even though his whole family lived there and he voted there. I love that. So let's talk now about 2000. Tell us how electronic voting machines were used to steal, and registration polls, books were used to steal the 2000 election, where the governor of Florida is the brother of the presidential candidate. There's now considerable controversy over which one is dumber, now that we've actually seen Jeb Bush out and about. But nonetheless, the brother and the two brothers, one's running for president. Florida is the deciding state in the Electoral College. How did electronic voting theft fit into all this, Bob Fitzgerald?
Well, the first thing is, and this is going to be Hillary's problem, the first thing you want to do when they do the voting theft, electronic theft, is you do it with the computers on the registered voters. And remember, Greg Palast did a great job of recording what Choice Point was up to, right? Jeb Bush, governor of Florida, and Kathleen Harris hired this private company that's worked with the FBI and the intelligence agencies of the country. Really, they're into data processing. What they do is come up with a very rigid criteria looking for felons. You know, they're looking for these 8,000 felons that might vote who shouldn't vote in Florida, because Florida does not allow you to ever vote, even if you're out of jail, if you've ever been a felon. So,
and of course, that law came out of the Jim Crow era after the Civil War, when the 11 states of the former Confederacy did everything they could to prevent black people from voting. So they put in a law saying if you've been convicted of a felony, you can never vote again. And then somehow hundreds and hundreds of thousands of blacks were charged with felonies.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, you could make them work, because slavery or involuntary servitude was prohibited unless you were incarcerated.
Right.
You had the chain gangs.
And so what did Jeb Bush do to the voter rolls?
Well, exactly, Jeb Bush and Kathleen Harris brings in this company, and in order to get to find these supposed 8,000 felons, they used a method to Choice Point, which was same or similar names or same date of birth. And the only state that would help them find these felons was Texas, where George W. Bush was the governor. So what they would do is, if there was a person, and a lot of these also were classified by race, if your name was James Johnson and you were 45 and a felon in Texas, they would purge you if your name was James Johnson, 19, a black guy in Florida.
Or that's fair.
They were targeting Hispanic and black voters' names under the guise of making the world safe from felon voters. So they ended up...
Well, listen, Bob, I want to issue right now, I want to ask all the other Harvey Wassermans in the world, and especially in Texas, to please don't get convicted of felony, because I want to be able to vote.
Well, I thought they came after you. They did in Ohio, right? They didn't know you lived at the same house.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that in 2004. So in 2000, they eliminated how many? What's the estimate of the number of voters that were eliminated under this felony computer program?
About 92,000.
Oh God!
And they were overwhelming. a majority of them, 51% or more, were African-American voters. So, and many were Hispanic. It was really targeted right to Democratic hardcore voters.
And what was the final margin of victory for George W. Bush?
Oh, you know, like, you know, whatever that 537.
Yeah.
The
less
funny,
600 votes.
In the hundreds, right? And so that's what they did ahead of time, right? They were able to purge the voting rolls. Now, remember that the main reason, the only reason Bush becomes president is because of Volusia County, the 20,000 electronic vote swing by ES&S, where they're essentially subtracting massive amounts of votes, 16,000 votes from Gore, and giving Bush 4,000 he didn't earn. So that was a 20,000 vote swing, which allowed Fox News, using the cousin of George Bush and Jeb Bush, to call him the winner because of a so-called admitted, apologized for by Roger Ailes before Congress, a computer glitch that accidentally shifted 20,000 votes, leading to the call that Bush had won. And of course, the famed words from the cousin was, Jebby says, Bush wins. Jebby said George wins. So, and all of it was based on a so-called computer malfunction that was very convenient.
Right.
So the reason they were able to hang on is because, you know, they were predicted to be the winner by all four channels, even though the AP and other sources are saying it's too close to call. Is they're essentially calling the race based on a admitted, recognized, apologized for computer glitch.
And so George W. Bush becomes president, and then the response of the Congress is to pass the Help America Vote Act to blanket the nation with touchscreen electronic voting machines that are designed to be rigged. Is that correct? Bob?
Yeah. A lot of the guys that were involved in that, if you read our article or our book, a lot of those people had been Bush operatives in the 80s and 90s. So what they did in the 90s, which was very important, they set up these nonprofit election integrity companies. But all of them are Republican and Bush operatives. And they're pushing this electronic voting, including the Yurosevich brothers, the two brothers that created ES&S, as well as Diebold in that situation. So with both of those people and a lot of Bush operatives, they then went from the nonprofits to getting appointed to the Election, Assistance Commission, the EAC. So their solution to the punch card.
Bob? Oh, Bob, are you there? Sounds like we lost Bob for the moment. So what happens in the 80s is that all these Republican operatives with electronic backgrounds start to put together a network of electronic voting machines and of monitoring nonprofits that will allow them to rig the upcoming electronic a spread of electronic voting machines. Now, in 2002, because of the public outcry that came from the Florida election, the stolen Florida election, everybody knew it was stolen. Anybody who paid attention knew it was stolen. the big theatrical play during 2000, as many of you may remember, was these endless fiascos where you had Scantron ballots and punch card ballots that had hanging chads. And you saw on TV election officials haggling over whether or not a particular ballot
had been cast for Bush or Gore or someone else. A lot of these were butterfly ballots that were completely designed to confuse the voter. And this went on to very much give the public the impression that the problem was in Florida was had to do with paper ballots, when in fact it was precisely the opposite. So in 2002, in the Congress of the United States, you have a congressional cabal, basically, led by a guy named Bob Ney, N-E-Y, who was a congressman from Southern Ohio, and very much part of Team Bush, who promoted the Help America Vote Act. And that, Bob, tell us what the Help America Vote Act did.
I'm moving to better reception here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good. So tell us the details of the Help America Vote Act. Oh, I'm losing you again.
Okay, so, can you hear me now?
Yeah, give us the Help America Vote Act. Tell us what the Help America Vote Act did.
Well, that was federal money that was flowing to the states to encourage them to buy the new electronic voting technology. So if you couldn't afford to buy the new voting machines, the federal government would spend billions of dollars so that everyone can vote on these privately programmed computer machines. So, and again...
And how much money was laid out in the Havre for electronic voting machines?
You know, I mean, it was in the billions. I don't know what the last number was, but... you had billions of dollars, and they're not only updating the voting machines, they're updating the central tabulators and helping you with assistance with these private maintenance companies, like Triad. So
it was a
massive upgrade. And prior to that, even more important, I think, what Ney did is he allowed a company called GovTech to put in a private firewall in the House of Representatives for the first time in history. And so they took over all the email communication for the Ways and Means Committee, for the House Judiciary Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, and the House Administrative Committee, who gets all the contract. So you now have a private third party essentially monitoring all your emails instead of a government staff loyal to the legislature. And of course, the guy who owned that company was Mike Connell.
Okay, so we'll talk about Mike Connell. Mike Connell from Canton, Ohio, a Bush operative. Where did Mike... So what you've done now, what Howard does, is it essentially turns over the monitoring capabilities of the key committees in the Congress to a private corporation, which is run by and owned by and run by a Bush family operative named Michael Connell. Tell us a bit about Michael Connell.
Well, Michael Connell, again, was a rabbit right to lifer, devoutly Catholic, was concerned with, fighting the war against, to save the unborn, to save the babies is... he liked to think he owns another company called New Media, which does most of the computer programming, setting up websites, computer systems, linking to computer server farms for the Republican Party and the major Republican candidates. So that's called New Media. So on the one hand, he's wearing a hat where he is one of the most partisan, right-to-life Republican computer operatives in America. And then he puts his wife, who sort of said she wasn't even aware of this to a great extent, a woman-owned company called GovTech, which is taking these contracts from the U.S. Congress and from the state of Ohio. So he's got two companies, one an absolutely rabid right-wing Republican computer company, the other one, a neutral, partisan, supposedly government contractor. And it's GovTech, that contract with the state of Ohio.
For what? What is the contract between Ohio and GovTech?
Oh, the GovTech, about 14 months prior to the 2004 election cycle, right, in the summer of 2003, the Secretary of State in Ohio, J. Kenneth Blackwell, signed this very lucrative contract with GovTech, which is Michael Connell, Bush and Rose's favorite IT guy. They signed a contract with him to essentially outsource and run the election in 2004 in Ohio. And he agrees to set up. He provides them an architectural map. Under oath, I got to depose him with Cliff Arnebeck in a famous lawsuit called King Lincoln Brunsville versus Blackwell. He admits under oath that Blackwell says, okay, and you'll use Triad, this right-to-life computer maintenance firm out of Ohio, and you'll use SmartTech for your server farm, which was run by Jeff Averbeck, a hardcore right-wing, right-to-life evangelical minister who got into high-tech server farms, providing server space for web pages. Swift Voters for Truth, who attacked Kerry, the White House, were all on his server farm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So now you've got three rabidly partisan right-wing Bush fanatics running Ohio's election. If a 14 months ahead of time, they said if the Ohio supercomputers and voting system goes down, which would be a virtual impossibility, don't worry. We'll send it to this private right-wing evangelical in Chattanooga, Tennessee, operating out of the basement of the old Pioneer Bank building, and they'll record the vote and send it back to Ohio. It was their mere oversight.
Amazing, amazing. And so when we head into the Ohio election in 2004, after the fiasco in Florida in 2000, the Bush v. Gore decision, Harbor comes in, blankets the country with electronic voting machines, and then we head into the 2004 election with the Bush family totally in charge of the electronic processes by which the election will be cast and counted. Is that correct?
Yeah, and as the computers came in, you were getting reports out of Miami County, Carroll County, all these reports about private contractors coming in without appointments and programming the computers. And a lot of these old election officials that have never dealt with a computer voting machine are happy. They're bragging about it. Yeah, the Rapp family through Triad came in and fixed our computers the week before the election. just wanted to make sure they were up to snuff. So
yeah.
I mean,
I think we're near the end of our time, but I have to have you back next week to continue this. We've been talking about the history of elections and election theft in the United States. We've just gotten to 2004 Ohio. The title of our book and these two programs is Why Hillary Can't Win. And the reason she can't win is because the electronic voting machines are rigged. I want to make it very clear, by the way, neither Bob nor I is a Democrat. We are Greens. Bob has been a candidate for many Green Party campaigns here in Ohio, and I am the shadow cabinet energy secretary of the Green Party. We'll continue this next week. Thanks, Bob. Come back with us next week.
You're welcome.
Forward to the Green Power and Wellness Show, where all the elections are on hand-counted paper ballots. Thank you, crew in New York, and we'll be back with you in 7 days.